Everyone, and welcome to Scouting the League. Week one of rookie minicamp is over. Headlines starting to come out about who stood out. Perhaps some of those tryout guys are now headed for a second weekend to make their mark. It can certainly be an emotional time, emotional roller coaster for both players and agents as they make it through this time of the year. But as I tell every agent I work with, relax, take a breath. The thing that every player has to do right now is stay healthy and stay on the field, especially for tryout guys and undrafted free agents. If they perform, if they stay healthy, they're always going to give themselves a chance. And with those changes on the 90-man rosters come changes in the building with front office staffs. And for that, there is no better expert than my co-host and founder of Inside the League, Neil Stratton. So today, we will be talking all things front office. But first, let me remind you to like, subscribe, and share this podcast wherever you are listening. Give us a 5-star review. Leave us some nice positive comments, or if you feel like it, you can tear us up a little bit. But your feedback interaction is what we love, makes it worth us getting on each week and rambling like we do. So, as I said, the expert in this field, in the terms of front office staff changes, kind of tracking everything across the league, the makeup of scouting staffs, is Neil Stratton. Neil was doing this before it was cool, before people were so heavily interested in scouting, doing all that. Again, as the NFL, as scouting has evolved, Neil has evolved with it. So today I get to grill Neil a little bit on all things we are seeing with the scouting offices, movement, hirings, firings. So Neil, are you ready to go?
I think we're locked and loaded, man. I got some good rest. I'm ready to roll.
Good. Well, this is the time, is again, as we talked about, time for scouting changes, and mostly at the lower levels, but higher ups, GMs, directors, a lot of times they're going to change right after the season when those GMs first get hired. You'll see a little bit more movement at the top, but again, post draft, now you see area scouts, maybe some regional nationals, get your directors shuffling around a little bit. Let's start with kind of a quick update on where we are at with new GMs and perhaps the moves we've seen with those franchises, if any.
Well, as you know, Roderick, most scouts are on 2-year deals, and their contracts tend to end right after the draft, maybe at the end of May, but somewhere in that time frame. That's why we see all the changes typically take place post-draft. So let's kind of go through all the GMs that have been named in the last 2 years. Start with Arizona. Arizona's been pretty active as far as changes. Monty Austin Ford is there, obviously. I expected them to be kind of come in a little New England. That really hasn't transpired per se. He has made a lot of changes, though. The Sunday after the draft, said goodbye to the college director and as well as one of the area scouts. That kind of came after they made a couple of changes in the upper tier, at the executive level earlier this year, and a couple after last year's draft. What I've been told is that they're probably done making changes, which means probably they're going to move a few people up, maybe make a few changes in-house, move some scouting assistants around, that kind of thing, give them a little more responsibility. The Cardinals are typically known as one of the more frugal teams when it comes to spending in the front office and that kind of thing. So that's kind of in line with what I'm hearing and what I would expect to happen there. So I don't expect to see any big names coming into Phoenix. Anything, things could change. One source told me that they may be looking for assistant GM, but I don't think that's going to happen. So we'll see. There's still plenty of time for things to switch around.
Certainly.
Tennessee, with Rand Carthon, another second-year GM, we could see a lot of change. The somewhat odd thing is that there really hasn't been a lot of change so far. They did part ways with Tom Roth, a really highly regarded area scout who'd been with him, I think, since 2017, had a long stint with the Bills, a guy that's really proved himself. My sources tell me he may be headed to Detroit. I don't expect him to be on the street for very long. He's a pretty accomplished guy and respected. And so, but as far as Tennessee, I think there are a lot more changes that are coming. Excuse me. I know that they have interviewed for a pro director. And so I think there may be some changes there, or at least some expansion. of the department. They may move Brian Gardner up maybe to a more senior position, give him kind of a little bit of a bump, and then bring someone underneath him. I'm not sure. The names that I've heard, this would be their first time as director, so I could see Brian still kind of running the show there, with kind of having a maybe a guy that he's kind of can kind of groom to be his successor. Washington obviously is a hot spot and a little bit of another kind of unique situation, because the buzz for literally months now has been that there could be a bloodbath there, but so far that hasn't happened. Now, my understanding is all the scouts in that department are finishing up their deals, so they don't have a lot of job security, obviously, beyond even this month. I think they end at the end of May or something along those lines. So I'm still expecting changes there. I've spoken to people inside that front office who are expecting things to happen, but no one can put a finger on what that's going to be. We could see some movement. If there are changes, we could see some movement into Atlanta, where Smith is, who had, obviously had left, who previously was in Washington, Kyle Smith. And Kyle's a former Bartlett Award winner, a guy that's really respected across the league and might have enough stroke to be able to bring guys into Atlanta. So if that happens, that's kind of how those waves could take place. But everything's in a holding pattern. And I think the theory that I have is that Peters would like to bring some people from San Francisco. The buzz has been that the Niners are going to elevate some people to into more senior roles. And I think we saw that happen at the combine when RJ Gillen and Tariq Ahmad were made co-directors of player personnel, kind of protect them, because you can't put in slips with a team and bring a guy in unless it's an upgrade. So I think the Niners may be kind of shuffling the deck a little bit and decide who they really want to keep. And then after that, maybe we'll see Peters bring some guys in. Maybe that's kind of the holdup on things. That's just my theory, though.
Well, I can speak again, certainly having worked for a time with Kyle Smith in Atlanta. Again, highly respected guy, again, worthy of that Bart list. And again, and along that San Francisco, I've heard that San Francisco has requested or told firmly, hey, no interviews from Adam. Again, again, to your point, really wanting to keep that staff together. And again, always becomes a real challenge for both the current staff. And when you lose a couple in a couple years, again, Rand Carthon and now Adam Peters, again, it becomes really hard. Again, something going back to gets overlooked with every staff is when good teams lose good people about every year. And to maintain a staff, again, you have to usually pony up a little more money, give some titles, and again, sweeten the pot a little bit. So again, with that Washington and San Francisco, you crank out good people like San Francisco has, again, it becomes a thing where, hey, Adam, good luck, but again, don't take any of our people. So good. Keep going. Where are we at after?
I think the Niners are, if not the marquee franchise in the league, I think they're the marquee front office in the league right now. I mean, they've become the cradle of GMs. I think they've certainly usurped the Patriots as far as this is where teams are going to find their next GM. So
Certainly.
many, Kwesi, obviously, Adam, Ran, just a number of talented guys. I mean, they won the best draft award at the 21, is that right? The 20 combine, and we still have that picture. And I mean, you just circle the guys that have been either. I mean, Ethan Waugh is the assistant GM in Jacksonville. All the guys that have moved, there's been so much movement there because they're so highly respected. They've done such a great job. So that's Washington, Las Vegas. Can't get a read there. I think I really thought the Raiders may have the same situation that Washington had, just with less. I think there have more stability there and more guys that weren't didn't have their contracts ending. I know they're kind of going through the renewal process with some of the guys there. Some of them have been. I don't think there's gonna be a lot of movement there, but I think that, like, the Raiders, for example, have a pretty expanded pro department, and I don't know that. I mean, Telesco comes from a team that had a really small, I think they had the maybe the second smallest department after the Bengals. And I think that's really more a function of the Spanos family and not wanting to pay a lot of scouts and kind of having that same maybe Carolina school of thought there, philosophy. But Telesco may also feel like he just wants kind of a tight group. It's not that he doesn't want everybody, he just wants the right people. And so maybe we see them pare down a little bit on this on the pro side. Maybe we see more people come over from the Chargers. I expect Tyler Lyon to certainly be given an opportunity to go to Las Vegas. I don't know what that role would look like, but Tyler's really highly regarded. He's kind of been groomed, was kind of groomed by Telesco. He's got pro and college experience. He's a real riser in the industry. Chargers, I don't, again, I think the Chargers, like the Raiders and the Commanders, were a team that a lot of play people were watching because they expected some changes. I think there may be a little bit of a situation in Baltimore, similar to what you're seeing with the Niners. I think Joe Ortiz would like to bring some people, but doesn't quite know who's available yet. It looks like if he does, it's going to be an expansion rather than making room. And with the caveat that they've already made a couple semi-pricey hires, bringing in Chad Alexander from the Jets, bringing in Corey Kowalczyk. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that name right. If I'm not, I'm sorry, Corey. But bringing in to kind of elevate their analytics profile in Los Angeles. Are the Spanish going to be willing to open their wallet even further after giving that big contract to the head coach, to Harbaugh, and bringing in two pricey guys at front office? I don't know, and I'm not privy to that information. Maybe that is why that we won't see changes in Los Angeles. I'm not sure, but I know the Ravens are a little like the Niners. They're not getting pilfered as much in their front office, but it certainly is a very talented one. And obviously Joe is just one example of that, of a guy with some upward mobility, and we'll see more of that, I think, as we go forward. New England is the interesting situation. Obviously, we're seeing a lot of candidates of color turn down even interviewing there, even guys that are on the street, because I think their perception is that Elliott's got the job lock, stock, and barrel. And I think that's probably an accurate one. So I think that's they're kind of having to sort through what we're seeing. What my read on it is, whereas the bigger firms that represent some of the top candidates are maybe steering their clients away from even interviewing in New England because they don't want the word to get out that hey, they got passed over, they interviewed and didn't get the job. And you're seeing a lot of that with the big media right now. Oh, this guy turned down an interview request. They're going to kind of outside, maybe some non-traditional ways, and talking to some of the less big firms maybe to bring in their candidates, which great. I would love to see some diversity, not necessarily of color. We're talking about the Rooney Rule. Obviously, we're going to see diversity there, but just of candidates. I mean, the more good candidate, there are a lot of, I guess what I'm trying to say is, there are a lot of good people out there. I like to see a lot of people interview, even if they don't get the job, even if it is Elliott's job. At least I think there's some benefit in going in and interviewing and being part of that experience. So that's good for those people, and
Certainly.
I'm happy for the ones that are heading that way.
Yeah.
And then the last team with the new GM is Carolina, where Dan Morgan is. And Carolina is a little bit of a tough read. They basically blew up their pro department last weekend, I think it was, or maybe last week, when they said goodbye to their pro director and their assistant pro director. So they've got an obvious space there to fill. I was talking to someone in their front office who was asking for candidates. What I was told is they're being very aggressive. They're not looking for easy hires, they're looking for really good hires. And if that means, I think that means that Tepper's op willing to open his wallet a little bit and go out and get the guys that really respect it. So we may see some interesting names coming in there. I know I've heard that Brad Obie, a guy who's been with the Bears, been with the Eagles, he parted ways with the Eagles, I guess, about a week ago. I've heard he's interviewed there. I haven't confirmed that yet, but that's what I've heard. Good for Brad if so. But I think they're gonna see a lot of names coming in there and interviewing in some interesting positions. I don't know that they're necessarily gonna be at senior places, but, and I'm not sure how they want to kind of skin that cat, so to speak, but they're looking for talent. And so I tip my hat to them for doing that. It looks like they're really, that Dan wants to build it in an old school scouting way. And I really respect that. And I think that probably goes against the grain of what we maybe expected from a David Tepper, who's a new guard owner, and those guys tend to cozy up to analytics and the new ways and those kind of things. And so if Dan's able to make this kind of an old school scouting department, then, here's to him.
Yeah. No, that's it's a fantastic rundown. Again, you think back on the scouts that I know that have been with Vegas now for the last 3 or 4 years. I'm hoping for their sake, maybe they can have some calm this year, because it has been some rocky waters for a bit now. And again, talking to one of them, there was probably more calm this year, kind of through the process that, hey, maybe everything is going to settle again. With Telesu and his chance, what Antonio Pierce is doing. So again, I'm hoping for that. It's an interesting one. Chargers and Baltimore. When a team, again, we kind of compare San Francisco, Baltimore, but Baltimore is a hard place to leave because of the way they run things, the way they both compensate financially and in other
Big point.
ways take care of their scouts. And so
Absolutely right.
again, it becomes a hard place to leave. It's got to be a really right situation. So for Joe to go out to the Chargers and try to grab some of those guys, again, that may be a hard sell when the purse strings are tight. Again, everything on New England is a fascinating one, just because it is really a change in the way they're doing things across the board. And then again, with Carolina, again, we've talked on this podcast about the owner, and again, he just continues to have some less than ideal headlines with some of the pre-draft stuff. And again, you hope an old school football guy like Dan Morgan is the guy in the right spot, that David Tepper kind of stays back, lets him run it. And again, I would say, based on what David Tepper's done, he may be open to open up the purse strings and pay some guys. So again, hoping for all those. And we've got changes. We've already had some changes. I was shocked Sunday after the draft this year. We saw a number of names hit the street really early. Again, maybe I'm thrown off. Maybe it's not as early as I was thinking. I was shocked to see on Sunday afternoon some of the names, area scouts and otherwise, hit the street. Was that early based on what you've seen in the past, Neil?
I think the model last year, and I thought was kind of become the custom, was to wait after rook to act to wait after rookie minicamp. Can't get that word out. And that's kind of what I was expecting. I mean, you go back to when Buffalo doused their whole staff, I mean, right down to the janitors practically, the day after the draft. What was that, 17 or 18? But that's been a long time. I mean, the more often than not, you saw most teams kind of wait. Now, in 2022, we saw this not that long ago, but 2022 was a little bit of an oddity because that was kind of the first year when we kind of finally had COVID behind us. People were starting to regulate again, and a lot of guys that had been held over, maybe even renewed, that might not have been renewed in 20, got renewed. Now it's 2022. Let's get them off the books. Let's get rid of these guys and move on. So you saw a little bit more movement then. But that, again, I thought that was more a product of the unusual times that we're living in now. For so many veterans to be dumped the day after draft and within 72 hours after the end of the draft, really blindsided me. I mean, it was just a constant stream that first week after the draft of names that are recognizable that have got many years on their belts. And I think I attribute that to, last year we saw a lot of movement on the analytics side. We started to see for the first time teams hiring analytics guys away from other teams and to build their programs and what have you. And my theory is, and we'll see if this is borne out as we go through it, more teams are looking to build out that analytics side, but they don't want to expand their scouting budgets. So if I get rid of a guy who's got 10, 15 years, he's probably making right around 200, maybe north of that, especially if he's a national guy. I can probably get two analytics staffers, maybe three, if I play my cards right for that kind of money. And I can stuff my analytics department and have more numbers crunchers. And if that's, especially if I'm a new owner and I really believe in that way of doing things, then maybe that's a way that I want to go. Some of the teams that made changes, I don't expect them to go that way. Some I'm still really scratching my head about. We'll talk more about that, I think, a little bit later in the show, but that's where I think teams are going, just because based on looking at last year, I think, typically up until 21, I think, or 22, we were averaging about 150 moves. That's hires, fires, elevations, whatever, in front offices. Last year, I think we had 300. The year before that, it was approached 300. I don't know if it's going to be like that this year, but one reason why the numbers have swollen so much is because there's so much moving on the analytics side. And that's something we didn't used to track that, but there's so much of it now that you almost can't ignore it because it's becoming a fundamental part of every team. Now, not to go too far down the road with this, but analytics are funny because not everyone does it the same way. There isn't really a template. No one's really shown a model for that. And when you ask people with a team how to use analytics, it's kind of slippery. It's hard to get a straight answer. So, again, a lot of people I think are throwing money at the only analytics side, not really knowing if they're getting a return on their investment or not, but afraid not to do it because everybody else is. So maybe that's why we've seen so much movement. Maybe that's why some of the more veteran guys are getting let go. Teams want to really go dip their toe a little bit further into the analytics pool and hope that they're doing something right.
No, it's funny. I was blessed that I was with the when I was with the Falcons. That was when in 2016 when analytics really started to become more and more of a not even a mainstream thing yet, but something that was more going to be accepted. And I remember again we had somebody that had built our database that was running part of it, and we hire a seasonal intern, and then that again it has snowballed into. You're spending easily probably over $1 million a year just on salaries, much less everything else they're doing. And it used to be scouting staff was separate than your analytics staff. And again, that kind of goes to the point of as it has evolved, for some teams, it'd be no hesitation. The analytics part is part of the scouting staff. Again, it's you've seen it. You really saw it with the Browns, obviously, and what they went through. Maybe they've backed off a little bit. You've got some of your more analytic-minded owners. But again, for most franchises, those two staffs, it's all part of the scouting staff or the personnel staff now, to where the analytics are maybe giving a portion of an advance or a portion of a report, and there is dedicated time to what they're doing, to where they are fully integrated, to where even a couple of years ago maybe that wasn't the case. It was really more of a split thing. And again, you start to see a little bit more, again, some analytics people going from being an analytics-based person to actually going on the road and doing some scouting. Is that something that that you see as a possible trend? Is hey, we're gonna cross train some of those because they are very, very different skill sets.
And they really are different skill sets. And you are seeing that a little bit. Scott Cohen, who isn't with the Ravens anymore, so maybe not as good of an example, but a good guy and a guy who has been on the scouting side and was, doing kind of the research part for the Ravens for a long time. I think Brian Shields in with the Jets, I think, is a guy who came up traditionally scout wise, and I think was doing more analytics kind of stuff. And you've seen certainly some amalgamations with the Browns, who are kind of at the point of spear when it comes to analytics. But I don't think that's being done in a really comprehensive way by a lot of teams. And I don't know how you do that effectively. It's the demand on the scouting side right now. The hard part is that character, grabbing character information. That's becoming harder and harder to do as scouts get younger and less connected, as more teams kind of go to a CYA model on what they tell scouts. I mean, you're hearing about, I may have even spoken about this on a previous podcast. When they sit down with the pro liaison, they get everybody in the room and they tape it on Zoom. Well, once you see that red light go on, you're not going to ask the same questions. You're not going to expect the same answers. So that's a rabbit trail. I don't mean to, but I guess what I'm trying to say is if there were a way that teams are trying, a weakness that teams are trying to attack on the road, it's the character evaluation. I don't think they're introducing the analytics yet into that. Maybe they should, but it's not something that I've heard of, at least not on a large scale yet.
One of the interesting things with the, again, we've talked about some of the, call them older scouts, some of the more seasoned scouts who scouted for maybe 15 or 20 years, really without any analytics. And again, with the introduction of analytics, again, you get some strong opinions on both sides. Again, analytics is the answer. Scouting is the answer. Analytics don't have any place. There is a marriage. There is a, again, something I talk about all the time is the, again, they're all puzzle pieces, right? Again, analytics may bring up a question that scouts have to answer, and scouts may ask a question that analytics can give some insight to. Do you think we're at the point where if you are uncomfortable with analytics, that you are going to have a hard time being a scout? Or again, to your character piece, good scouts are going to be good scouts, and again, there's going to be those that just stay away from the analytics side.
I think it's a team by team basis. I think if you go into Cleveland and you're uncomfortable with analytics, you're out of luck. But I don't think that it's been, even the Jags have made a major commitment to analytics, but I haven't really seen the marriage with their scouts, and I haven't heard that their scouts are going out and doing it anything differently. The thing about analytics is there's nothing right yet that scouts can hang their hat on and say, oh, well, because of analytics, we were able to do this better, or more effective this way. For example, on the field, you're seeing a lot more teams go for it on fourth down. And I think that's a direct product of analytics. But you don't have a parallel in scouting, at least not yet, that I've heard, where, oh, because of analytics, this kind of opened this world for us and gave us a way to see this in a way that makes us do things differently. I don't. There may be some people that argue that completion percentage is more highly valued in quarterbacks now, and maybe that's a product of analytics. Maybe more people are thinking that you don't have to be 6'6" to play quarterback anymore. Maybe that's a product of analytics. I've never heard it attributed that way, but I guess some could argue that. But if that were the case, those would be the two examples that I would come up with. Generally speaking, I think you can still be a scout with most teams without having a big handle on that. But I think it's also worth pointing out, we're seeing a lot more scouts that come in with a background in finance or math or, even physics and that kind of stuff. I mean, guys that have math and science backgrounds that are being recruited for scouting that you wouldn't have seen even 5 years ago, really. But that's becoming more and more commonplace. So I still think you can be a scout and not have to worry about analytics with most teams, but the further we go, I think the more we're going to see a marriage, even if it is to degree some degree a shotgun marriage between analytics and traditional scouting.
Well, it becomes a really interesting avenue, and hopefully something we can put a pin in this week. Plan on getting an analytics person on to talk through some of this stuff, because again, it is, again, from my perspective, it is fascinating. It allows you to ask questions. Again, some of the stuff when you start talking about Pro Football Focus and True Medias of the world, it helps you dig in on information, and from a scouting perspective, find some really detailed film to watch. Again, that's what it comes back to for me, is again, it helps you dig in on some of that stuff. But again, hopefully we can grab an analytics person on and get them on at some point to talk through some of this stuff. And we'll get back to the scouting for now. Again, getting back to the 2024 cycle. Again, we kind of hit on everybody last 2 years. Again, a lot of GMs are going to come in. Again, if they get hired in January, February, they're going to give, if you want to call it, a working interview to scouts across the board. Again, some people may get 3 or 4 months if the GM knows something already. Some of those, again, if it's a year and a half, again, maybe it depends on the scouting contract. But again, do you see any real surprises here as we make our way through 24? Again, it's still early. Anything that is going to surprise you, or maybe has surprised you, about where we're at?
Well, yeah, I mean, the big surprises were, for me, was the number of veteran scouts that were released in that first week, and we've gone over that quite a bit. But that was against trend, at least over the last 2 or 3 years. Again, with the caveat that 22, we saw a lot of that in 22, but that's because of this kind of fallout from COVID and why so many people had been, kind of held on to, I think, initially. But yeah, so having so many scouts let go early was really surprising. Some of the scouts who were let go were really surprising. One glaring example is Sam Somerville in Chicago. I mean, I don't mean to overreact, but I've spoken to dozens of scouts and asked them, make this make sense, and no one can. And I mean, Sam's a guy that not only has he won a Bartlett List award, he won the Fritz Pollard Scouting Award 1 year. I mean, here's a guy that has just got impeccable character, and I've never heard anything bad about him from a scouting standpoint either. And Sam also goes to bat for other scouts. I mean, when I've I don't mind saying I've spoken to him a lot of times, and I think very highly of him. Sam is a fan of other scouts, supports other guys, tries to help them. I mean, you just I don't I mean, again, I don't work for the Bears. I've never been a scout myself per se, but boy, just from being around guys and kind of knowing the culture, that was shocking. And now the other side of that is I don't expect Sam to be on the street for very long,
Right.
but it was certainly a big surprise. There's usually a surprise in the cycle, but that was one of the bigger ones, again, because he's been pretty highly decorated. And I thought with the team that was not going to make significant changes, they wound up, getting rid of two guys, and Sam was one of them. So that was really surprising. I mean, you're talking about a senior national scout with a really great reputation, a really good network, and a lot of fans, and not just me. And so I'll be interested to see where Sam lands. Now, Sam's got a little bit of time left on his contract. It's not as pressing and urgent for him. He can be a little bit more selective, but he won't be out there long because he's a really good scout, really good guy too.
Yeah, there's certainly one of those elements. Again, with a guy like, you referencing Sam having time on his contract, that's one of the things that I've, with all these early moves, one of the things I'm always expecting is to turn around the next day or within a couple of days and be like, okay, he's interviewing. Okay, now it all kind of makes sense. And that's that other shoe dropping. Again, with a guy like Sam, that it's now been getting close to week and a half, 2 weeks here, and nothing's really happening. Again, there's plenty of moves still to be made, but that's that always that other shoe that drops. Again, for scouts that chose not to re-up their contract because they maybe were betting on themselves, saw again former colleague, somebody they're very tight with, again going somewhere else. Hey, I'd love to, I'm gonna bet on myself and see if it works out. So again, there's always that second shoe that's gonna drop. And again, there's still plenty of time for that. When do you expect, again, through this process, again, we've got rookie mini camps last weekend and this weekend. Obviously a very popular time. The front office really is still largely together. Again, after this next weekend, when rookie mini camps are done, the building gets a little quieter. Again, whether it's half days, whether it's days on, days off, pro scouts, again, it gets a little quieter, and maybe the interview happens at that time. When do you really expect it to settle with, let's say, June 15th is kind of that mandatory mini camp when you really break for the summer?
Well, the second, a lot of team, I think we saw six teams have their mini camps the first weekend after the draft, and more going to that second weekend because the league is allowing, if you bring them in for that second weekend, you've got OTAs like 3 or 4 days later or something. You can stick keep them in the building until OTAs. So I think a lot of teams are kind of looking at it that way. That takes us to what about the 18th or thereabouts, when probably when we get to that
18th is the
following week.
Saturday. Yep.
Yeah. So I expect this last week of May is probably when a lot of teams really start to solidify things. Now that they've got kind of OTAs out of the way and RMCs out of the way, and now they can really kind of look at this and see where they are. That's my guess, but it's just a guess. And I, this I know a lot of interviewing is taking place right now, and it's kind of a game of musical chairs. If you've got guys out there that you really like, then you better go and get them before someone else does. And I know a lot of teams are putting in slips with scouts, with teams, and that kind of thing. So we could see it be very aggressive soon. But my guess is we see a lot of movement towards the end of this month. Now, we're again for the teams that are going to mostly make moves in-house. A lot of times they'll tell a guy, hey, we're going to do this. This is what's coming. And then they don't announce it until like right before camp or something like that.
Right.
It's gone from, when I first started tracking this stuff, it used to happen rather quickly. And really it was all done pretty much by June. And then maybe in June they'd start filling in with their scouting assistants and that kind of thing. But now it's really become a lot more of a 60-day process. And right up until that break period right there in early July, when the NFL kind of turns off for about 3 weeks leading into camp, that's kind of the end of it. Right around the July 4th is when all that stuff is ending. So I would expect things will be hot through the end of this month. Maybe June is where we see some announcements from teams that are just making moves in-house, and then July would be when things kind of simmer down and the focus begins to be on camp starting and that kind of thing.
Yeah, again, it becomes a for most scouts out there. Again, if you're under contract, hopefully you're feeling at least somewhat secure, knowing where you're at. But again, becomes for a lot of scouts that are, either with these teams we mentioned or again sitting down there, can become a little bit of a stressful time when they're maybe thinking about doing some 2025 work or where everything's going. Again, you've been tracking this stuff a while. Obviously, you've talked a little bit of trends. Analytics growing, shrinking, and we saw the ebbs and flows somewhat related to COVID with hirings, firings. Again, it always boggles my mind a little bit that we see coaching salaries doing what they do, player salaries obviously going up with the salary cap every year. But when we talk again, a Spanos in the Chargers refusing to spend for an entry-level scout, again, 50 to 75 isn't out of the realm. But again, let's say 50 to 100K for an additional scout that somebody wants. They're balking at that. Is that trend ever going to change, or are owners and decision makers going to try to pinch pennies where they can, knowing they're gonna have to pay their quarterbacks and rushers and coaches to be on the field?
The good news is that, I track, as you know, Roderick, we do the salary survey every year, and I think the numbers are moving north slowly, okay? But the difficulty with scouting is no one can point to this scout or that. I mean, scouts don't really have a metric per se. It's a function of, well, what area are you in? And, so many different factors. And so it's really hard to say, oh, wow, this team does it right. Because every team has good years and bad years. Every team's got scouts that are really good, but even those scouts have good years and bad. Some years a lot of players come out of their area, sometimes they don't. And so I think that that's because, whereas with coaches, you see a Sean Payton go to Denver, they break the bank for him. You see a Jim Harbaugh go to the Chargers, they break the bank for him, because these guys have a record of success that you can point to. I think because scouts don't have that same, there's no metric for scouts. You can't say, well, this guy is really good and here's why and here's what he's done. It's harder to compensate him in that way. And now, so I think that's got a lot to do with, because, I think if Sean Payton makes all this money, it kind of drags his coordinators along with him salary wise. It drags his down to his assistant coaches and assistant coaches. So I think that's why coaches are really getting paid, and scouts who are not out front, who don't have the same metrics, aren't getting paid. Now, one of the things that I'm starting to hear, and I'm excited to play a very tiny role in this, is that the BART list is giving recognition to some scouts, and maybe that will help kind of follow through and help move their salaries up. And if those good scouts get rewarded with higher salaries, hopefully, a rising tide, raises all boats, and we'll have to see if that happens. I know with one of the winners from this year, he said, he practically begged me, listen, you got to put more stuff out there about who the winners were, because in our building, no one on the ownership side has any regard for scouts unless they hear from someone outside the building that they're doing a good job. And so that's my hope, is that the BART list continues to grow in, I don't want to say import, but maybe influence, because I think it's going to benefit the guys that are doing a good job with it, and hopefully that helps everybody. So we'll see. I mean, that's kind of my feeling on why scouts don't make more money. And I mean, I hear it all the time. Why are the coaches making all this and we aren't? And that's my explanation on why I think that is.
Yeah, certainly. It kind of lead us into kind of some wrap up questions. Again, one of the things I think about not so long ago, 2016, I accept a full-time scouting assistant position with an NFL team, the Atlanta Falcons. I was ecstatic when my salary in my first year was $27,000. Again, for the young aspiring scouts, they tell you all the time, get your foot in the door, get in the building, and then do it from there. So again, it doesn't lend itself to upping scouting salaries when you can hire a good, competent, whatever you want to call it. Again, if I was either of those, then I was blessed. For $27,000 for a year to be in an NFL building, because when I become a pro scout in about a year and a half, and they about double my salary, I am still just over $50,000, which again, in some places, that's probably not even a livable wage. But again, I'm ecstatic. I'm in the building, I've gotten a bump. Again, you stay with really low salaries. Again, it goes back to that thing of young scouts versus old scouts, where again, it becomes all part of kind of a different, all part of the big problem of how do we get these salaries up when you are so willing to work for peanuts just to get in the building and start working your way up. Again, from what I have heard, scouting assistant salaries across the board, again, along with entry level scouts, have gone up. But again, there's always going to be that element to it, when everybody truly is, again, it's not collectively bargained. There's no, conglomerate of scouts to be able to bounce this stuff off of. Talk to me about a little bit about that. How do you think that could change and, help as it moves up the chain?
Well, a couple points. Number one, it's like you said, it's I think there's a couple years ago, maybe when there was this outcry on social media that everyone, even starting out, should make all this money. That's great in theory, okay? I think it was 4 years ago, I had a team ask me for a scouting assistant suggestion, and so I gave him one, and this guy happened to be married with kids, but dying to get into the league. And he was gonna be asked, he interviewed and he turned it down because they were gonna bring him in. We're talking about living in one of the most expensive major metros in the country. And he was gonna get paid $50, $15 an hour. And they said, hey, but listen, the good news is we're gonna work you about 60 hours a week. So you'll make lots of overtime. So
Right.
this guy was gonna be looking at moving into a major metro, bringing his wife and kids, working 60 hours a week at $15. And I don't know what that works out to, even with overtime. But I mean, that's, it's nothing. So if you're going to do this, I always tell people, stop looking after 30. If you get to 30 and you haven't gotten there, go get a wife, be fruitful and multiply. You got to do this while you're young and single. But talking about a little bit about the salaries and stuff and why they haven't gone up as well, it wasn't long ago, 15 years ago, when you're talking about six-man scouting departments, you may have one pro guy, one college director, he might have one, maybe two guys underneath him. That was commonplace. Now you're looking at about a 20-man scouting department. In the old days, when they were bringing in scouts and starting to expand, they were bringing in college coaches. These college coaches, usually they were in their 50s, they got gray hair, they got big bellies. They're not looking to break the bank. They're just looking to have something to, to round out there until they get to retirement. They've got a pension probably from somewhere else, and they don't need to make a lot of money. Well, now you're bringing in guys that are, more and more. I always say you go to an all-star game, you can't tell the players from the scouts, because more often than not, the scouts, some guy walking around in a team windsuit who's still in shape, probably was on the field 2 to 3 years ago. They're looking to be professional, upwardly mobile type people. And but the salaries are still kind of what they were when the fat old guy coaches were coming in and not expecting to make a lot of money. So that's going to be slow to change. And just like you pointed out, there's no union for scouts. And because it is such a selective group and there's always so many people that want to get in, a scout really doesn't have a lot of leverage if he's asking for more money. Unless he's really in with the GM or something along those lines. So, you get the teams like Baltimore that are really compensating their scouts and they're doing a good job. But other teams may, like the Bengals, for example. Again, I'm not privy to their pay structure as much, but I mean, you're talking, that is an old school, old department. I think they've got seven guys. And it's hard to argue with them when they went to Super Bowl 2 years ago. And if it weren't for Joe Burrow getting hurt, probably go to the playoffs. What would that would be 3 years in a row or something like that.
Nope.
So, you know, it's again, without a major metric, without something you can really hang your hat on with scouts, it's hard to say we got to pay these guys more. It's moving in the right direction. It's just not moving very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, you've already given one piece of advice. Again, if you hit that age 30, again, it may be time to think about something else. Again, something we won't get into today. Expect college scouting staffs to possibly grow. And again, that's probably going to create an avenue. But again, for some guys, the NFL is it. That is the goal. That's what they're going to work for. What is your advice for somebody, young aspiring scouts? What are you telling them this time of year or really year round? What can they do to try to get in the building?
Well, if you read my stuff, or if you listen to this podcast, or if you've ever caught me out on the road, you're going to know what I'm about to say. The perception right now is, hey, if I want to be a scout, so I'm going to get in front of a screen, I'm going to get behind a keyboard, I'm going to start spouting opinions, I'm going to try to teach myself how to identify players, and by God, I'm going to be the one that knows it. That this quarterback's going to fail and this quarterback's going to succeed. And this seventh rounder should have been a second rounder and all those kind of things. Okay. And you're going to have some successes and some failures, but you know, it goes back to, I spoke at the personnel symposium, I think in 19 or maybe 18. And I talked about this, how do you get a job in scouting? And my main push was you got to get out and meet people and network and build get as many numbers in your phone as you can. And as I'm giving this message, I'm looking at it. There's all these round tables, and this round table, everyone's dressed in red. This one's all in blue. This one's all in green. Everyone comes and they sit in their silo and they drink beer with their buddies, but they don't get out and meet more people. And I think that by nature, scouting is a somewhat introverted profession. Hey, let me go get in a room and focus on, watch some film and tell you who's good and who's bad. That doesn't lend itself as much to making the relationships that you've got to make. And so to me, do whatever you can to get around football, volunteer, meet as many people as you can, prove yourself to as many people as you can, go out and find that champion who's going to pull you in. Right now, we've got a viable spring league. Maybe not for much longer, but at least right now we do. We've got more teams playing football than ever at a reasonably high level on the college side. We've got a lot of opportunity. You know, my friend Matt Manicharian at Sports Info Solutions, every year they advertise for guys to come in and basically just watch film and grade the film for their service, and they pay for that. They're now, again, you're not going to get rich. But there are opportunities to get out there if you're young and single, probably, and willing to work for a little bit less money to go out and meet and build your network and really prove yourself to people. And if you don't, I mean, to me, if you don't do that, you're not even, you know, you don't have a shot at this. I think you've got to make friends in the business, prove yourself to people, and just build that network because, you know, Roger, as you well know, more often than not, hiring is a spoil system. It's not as much, oh, this is the best guy out there. It's, this is a guy I can trust. This guy knows my system. This guy, I just got a good feeling about him. And that's how you get hired. And that's probably true in a lot of places, but it's certainly true in football. If you go out and you find that champion, you work for someone, then you could climb the ranks pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But if you just want to be the guy that's on Twitter, you know, ripping other people because they drafted such and such, that's not the way to go, I don't think. And yeah. I don't think you can get a certificate and I'm not trying to pick on, there are a lot of services that do a very conscientious job. A lot of them are employing friends of mine that help with the instruction. That's a good thing, but don't make that your only thing. Cause if you think that's going to, you know, then you're really in trouble.
Yeah.
So again, get out from behind the keyboard and go out and meet and do football with people.
Yep. Networking, again, it's something that I had to learn, not at all natural for me. As you said, it's an introvert's game, but again, huge in my scouting, you know, background. And again, as I came up through, and again, like I said, being a part of football, being a part of a team, If you want to be in the NFL, find a spot where there's going to be NFL people. Again, it's great to be at a smaller school, mid-level school where you're doing a bunch. But again, you know, doing something for free. For me, it was Ohio State and connections I made there that opened the door for me. Again, be willing to be there at 5 a.m. and, you know, leave at 11 p.m. It's all the things. Work hard, be trusted, do the right things. All makes sense. And I think that should kind of put a bow on it for us today. Neil, I know both our mentions and our DMs will be open. Again, Neil is at Inside the League on Twitter. I'm at RightStepADV. If you have questions, thoughts, comments, make sure you head over and hit us up there. Make sure you also sign up for Neil's Inside the League newsletter. That can be done. You can find it there on his Twitter or at InsideTheLeague.com. Neil, you also have some additional stuff at Inside the League. Talk to me about that and what people would get out of that.
Well, normally our rate is $29.95 a month. And if you're coming in and you just want to do that for, you know, maybe May or June or whatever, then you're welcome to. But if you want to stick around through the end of November, we have what's called the next wave rate. And if you're a guy who is just dying, or a girl who's dying to learn more about scouting and maybe hear the hot stuff that I don't put on Twitter, then you might want to come on board for that at that rate. Save you a load of money and give you an opportunity to read everything that's on the site. And now that's not something that we advertise normally. It's not something you'll find. There's nowhere to register for that on the site. But if you hit me up via DM or at Inside the League on Twitter, or if you reach out to us through our Contact Us button on ITL, then and inquire about that, then we can get you set up there. You'll just register. You'll have all the same access to ITL that everybody else has. It's just, again, it's one flat rate, and you've only got to pay one time, and it takes you all the way through up until December. And I think that's something that may be of interest to people. That's something we're going to do. We do it every May. We offer this. We don't advertise it, but we do provide it. And so if there's anyone out there who just wants to get a little bit more information and maybe find out a little bit more before everybody else does, then you might check that out. Again, you can reach me via DM at Inside the League on Twitter, or just hit the Contact Us button on the Inside the League website. Inside the League.
There we go. Our first exclusive offer from the Scouting the League podcast right there for Inside the League. Again, I can't recommend it. As a scout, I was signed up for the Friday newsletter wrap that Neil sent out. Again, a ton of information, regardless of how deep you are in the industry. If you're an agent, a scout, in personnel and college, again, you should sign up for the newsletter. Make sure you go do that again. And maybe that monthly subscription is something you want to jump on, try for a few months through November. If you're an agent, also have another offer for you. Check out Agent Live 360. That is the number one sports software for you. It's going to almost assuredly help you run your agency more efficiently and more effectively. AgentLive360.com. From player profiles, date management, invoicing, endorsements, Agent Live 360 has everything you need to run an agency. Sign up for a demo. I will walk you through the whole thing, perhaps even talk some football on there. Well, pick my brain on anything you can think of. Again, AgentLive360.com is where you can sign up for that. Neil, again, tremendous information. Appreciate you talking about all things scouting staff. Again, if you want to keep the updates coming, make sure you check out Neil on Inside the League. Rookie Minicamp 2 coming up this weekend. You heading out to see anybody?
No, I don't. I kind of stick around, but maybe that's something I should do one of these days. It's just, you're watching a lot of guys running around in shorts. It's not the same as football, but it is, again, where football is happening, and that's always a good place, right?
Yeah, football is always good. There's going to be crowds. Hopefully, maybe some of those undrafted free agents and certainly rookies and draft picks look good. Again, stay healthy, perform at a high level. That is the name of the game for these guys. 2025 film is already on the way. 2025 mock drafts, top 2025, top 100 boards. Again, we'll start getting into 2025 players at some point. But, you know, for now, we're going to focus on what's going on in the NFL. The UFL continues to roll along. As Neil said, there's been some good competitive football, and they're going to look good doing it. So even though this can be a quieter time for the NFL with schedules, rookie minicamps, everything, there's still plenty of ball out there. So in all you do, keep scouting.